Hi, you're listening to Building Expert Brands. I'm Tony Gibbs, and today we're joined by Johnny Pavlik, who is both the founder and CEO of the international branding and marketing firm Mantra Media. Johnny is here to give us his insights into bad branding in new markets. Johnny, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tony. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. So, as always, if you're listening at home, you can learn a little bit more about Johnny in the show notes. But for now, let's launch right into it. Johnny, please go ahead and tell us all about bad branding in new markets.
So it depends where we want to start, really. I mean, there's been so many projects over the years done by not just the smaller brands, but large international brands that have done some really unusual things when it comes to what they think is going to work. I'll give you a couple of examples. I think one of the funniest examples that I have ever seen of a marketing campaign in a new market that's produced some unusual results was KFC. Now, KFC's, you know, finger licking good, right? We all know the phrase. And they translated that into Mandarin and they translated it to eat their fingers off when they went into the Mandarin market. So obviously that didn't go down so well. Even worse, when they lost a lot of money on this, was Pepsi. Pepsi brings you back to life campaign. They launched in China and again translated into Mandarin. What did the translation mean in Mandarin? Pepsi brings your ancestors back from the grave. So again, a global brand, you know, lots of research at their disposal. They could have done some amazing things, but got it epically wrong. Not as wrong as possibly, or even just as bad, was Vicks in Germany. Obviously, everyone knows everyone's used Vicks at some point in their life. And Vicks in German is pronounced Vicks because of the, you know, V becomes an F. And unfortunately for Vicks the brand, Vicks refers to a very particular intimate act behind closed doors. So when they launched into Germany, again, they had to rethink the way that they'd done the brand. So I mean, I have loads of horror stories about bad branding in new markets. I'll give you one more. Mercedes-Benz. And you think Mercedes-Benz, archetype brand of luxury and esteem and really understanding their markets. When they went in the Chinese market, their name was Benzi. And Benzi, unfortunately, sounds very close to the meaning of rush to die. So again, their venture into mainland China was epically tragic. So again, there are so many examples of this. I've consulted with chambers of commerce before in other countries and obviously a couple of embassies in London to talk to brands who are wanting to enter the UK or brands that are wanting to export from the UK to overseas. And one of the challenges that these are the brands that I always talk about. I always talk about, you know, you're going to get it wrong if you don't do your research. You need to work with people on the ground. You need to hire linguists. You need to consider co-creation. But many brands don't do that. There's a lot of challenges that people can get into if they don't do the research properly.
Absolutely. Those are some really extreme examples. I'm loving it. It sounds like all these examples have one thing in common, and that's translation problems.
Yeah, I think there's a translation in the wording, definitely. This can happen in lots of different ways, though. I mean, if we think of domestic brands, well, not to us, but into the US, we think of maybe Tropicana. Tropicana rebranded in 2009, sorry. And they rebranded all the elements that people loved. They had this fun, creative typography and visual aesthetic. They decided to hire a branding company, obviously the wrong branding company. And what came out the end was just the most boring typeface and just this very cheap looking packaging in their products. What was the result? It was a, was it 20% drop in sales? 20%. And then they obviously reverted back to the previous brand. And that was purely a typography and visual aesthetic that epically failed. Another domestic brand, PwC. We think PwC, incredible, astute and erudite group of financial experts. Obviously, cultural intelligence is very different to academic intelligence. And they tried to rebrand in 2002, I think it was, to just the word Monday, with the logo Monday, which we know is a kind of CRM brand now. But for PwC, which is a much loved brand with certain types of institutions, etc., when they did that, it met quite a big backlash from their customer base. So again, it's understanding, yes, there's translation issue, but there's also a research issue. I'll give you one more example of where research has gone wrong. I mean, you had Vodafone that, you know, really tried to grow in Japan and they focused on the wrong things. Their posters, their TV ads, all their media campaigns were on the wrong audience. And at a time where SoftBank was, you know, starting to kind of grow, the Vodafone ended up creating campaigns that were pretty much for 0.1% of the Japanese market. And their market share just went, I mean, there was lots of things that went wrong there. There was a cultural issue. There was a understanding how to work in that environment, Japanese processes in business. But it was an epic fail. Some estimate that it cost them multiple billions in the end of market share lost to SoftBank, which we know now is, you know, absolutely huge. It's gargantuan as a provider. But again, it's about that understanding the community. I mean, a very present one right now is the coronavirus. So people are thinking about how do you brand the vaccine? How do you communicate in a competent way you need to have a vaccine? And Japan have created this beautiful little Shiba Inu dog that gives you advice online. And it's a beautiful little icon. It's just this wonderful little pup. But again, Japan being the land of cute characters for brands, it just works. It's an emotional attachment. Maybe we could try that over here. I don't know, but it's understanding that there's a cultural competency that has to be considered alongside the visual elements and things like that. I mean, so we run something called the Influencer Training Academy, and we've run it since 2016. The first time we ran these courses were in Japan. And there's a visual identification and research module that we cover. One of the things we talk about is the concept of color. So the concept of color in different cultures means different things. And some people are completely, you know, they just don't have the marketing knowledge or branding knowledge to understand this. It's like the concept of a yellow book. At the moment, everybody wants to create a yellow book in the UK because it's bright and it stands out amongst other books when you look on shelves and things. Orange or yellow seem to be the things that it'll stand out, but is that good in the way that it stands out? So one of the things we talk about is a yellow book might stand out in the English market. In the Chinese market, it's very different. A yellow covered book denotes pornography. So again, it's understanding that colours have significance and we have to be very careful of what certain colours mean.
Really interesting stuff. I notice all those examples are really big brands. Have you seen the same thing happen with smaller brands, whether that's a one-man outfit or small teams of 10 or 50 or so?
Yeah, many, many times. There was a brand in Poland that it was a pub snack that they were trying to enter the market, a very, very popular pub snack in Poland. They were trying to bring to the UK, and the way that they positioned it was not the best. I think the name they came up with was Beer Fingers, which obviously didn't go down so well. So yeah, there are lots of small brands that don't consider research to be at the pivot. Unfortunately, there are many branding agencies still that have that kind of madmen philosophy of, you know, I'm going to disappear to an island for 3 weeks on the client's budget and do some crazy stuff that's going to give me some wonderful idea out of the air. And that will be it. That will be what the name of the car brand is, or it'll be the name of da da da. And unfortunately, even a lot of small branding agencies do this. They go, okay, there's a whiteboard. What do we think? And really, that's not the best place to start. The best place to start is research, is understanding the demographics. What's already working out there and why? Why does somebody need to pay attention to this? I mean, Saatchi & Saatchi, they've come up with some interesting ideas on contemporary marketing, post-industrial contemporary marketing. One of the things is you need to create loyalty beyond reason. That's one of their big things, because right now the traditional brands are losing relevance because in post-industrial societies, function and technology are given, right? Everybody expects it will do what it do, it'll do, and it'll do it correctly. So how do we go beyond that? How do we create the connection? And we know that actually lasting relationships aren't based on rational thinking. So there's an irrationality to loyalty that we have to create. It's like Dan Pink, you may have read Drive. He says, was it the three intrinsic elements to autonomy, purpose, and mastery? And you have to be able to appeal to these kind of things. You kind of have to get into the psychology of the user and understand what it is. They can be, Japan are brilliant at branding generally, and they do that very well. But then again, mastery is part of their culture. You know, it's in their DNA, the devotion to mastery. And when you think of everything from craft to theatre, food to factories, everything has this attention to even the most minutiae detail to make whatever it is that they're producing the best that it possibly can be, because they love the act of whatever it is they're doing. There's genuine love and purpose. And I think in the West, probably some branding people miss that.
Interesting. So you mentioned that normally it's best practice to look at what's usually working out there and figure out why. I wonder if you ever flip the script and look at what's working out there and why, to be able to break the rules and do something that's the opposite of what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, that can also work. I mean, it still has to have a focus on the psychology of the user. Sometimes we will do things that are cavalier or maverick in our positioning. And for brands that are more open to doing that, at the moment, people are quite conservative in their approach to the markets, which you understand. When a market is uncertain, people are less likely to take risks. I think being cavalier in your approach is definitely useful, and it definitely makes an impression. It's just, is it the right impression? Godiva chocolate, they did that Love and Hug campaign, the Valentine's Day. I know we've just passed Valentine's Day. So in 2013 in Tokyo, they did an absolutely fantastic campaign. So the Godiva campaign was particularly interesting because it was about an experience. So what they did is they built a chocolate robot man that was suited up and had like a chocolate head. And what it did is, and it was a fantastic forward thinking. I mean, this again, we're thinking 2013. What users would do is they would get people into stores, and they did this in a big retail store in central Tokyo. And people would walk in and they would have to hug the robot as hard as they can. And it would measure the pressure for 10 seconds. And then what would happen is it would then put it on their timeline on Facebook. So they'd have to sign in through Facebook, and it put it on their timeline what their pressure was for the hug. And then whoever had the most pressure on the hug would win a prize. And again, got nothing to do with chocolate. It's got nothing to do with manufacturing or the, you know, any process of production or quality. Da, da, da. It's just an experience. We know that experiential marketing became a bit of a buzzword a few years ago. It kind of came and went really quickly. But really, that's the stuff that worked. It's the intangibility. It's the irrationality of having a love for a brand. None of that ever really makes sense. But it's what brands need to do now, regardless of size. Loyalty doesn't just come from you being competent in your processes, because that's expected now. It's how does it feel? And am I being part of an ecosystem and a community? Brand is also about the ecosystem. At Mantra, like yourself, we've got podcasts and we've got newsletters and we have events and we have masterclasses and we've got all these things that go on for our clients and our communities globally. And the reason for that is to give people an experience. When you become a client of Mantra, you don't just get a delivery, you actually become part of a community. And I think that's important for lots of different reasons. But I think from a relationship perspective, on a brand loyalty perspective, it's important that you give people an experience of being part of something.
Brilliant. Wow. What's your podcast about?
So we have two series at the moment. One's the Learning from Leaders series. Another one's the Entrepreneur series. The Entrepreneur series is what it says on the tin. So really fantastic entrepreneurs across the globe who've done amazing things. You know, we've interviewed people like Larry Gould, who went from a council estate in Leeds to building over 100 million pound turnover business. He now lives in the Hamptons. And somebody who represented manufacturing tailoring in Yorkshire for him and his father for the last 100 years. trying to keep tailoring in Yorkshire. And then we've had Andrew Grimes on there as well. Wonderful human being, the first registered British psychoanalyst in Japan. He's been in Japan for the last 40-something years. And he runs Tokyo Counseling Services, which was the first counseling service in Tokyo. So we get to interview some wonderful human beings that have achieved incredible things against all odds. And for me, it's a fantastic way to not just understand more about their journeys and their stories, but also share those lessons with people, because that's the only way we learn, right? Is by listening and engaging in those conversations.
Sounds excellent. So you mentioned not long ago experiential marketing. Is that something that you proactively still do a lot with your clients, your firm, that is?
So right now, any kind of physicality is a little bit out of the window. So we try and create immersive environments and experiences through digital. So when we talk about building websites, our web dev team are just absolutely incredible. They don't just, well, they're technologists as well as developers. So they build experiential events. So a lot of the things that our clients are asking for us at the moment isn't just a web page. A web page doesn't cut it anymore. You need to create an environment. So what we look at creating is, and blogs don't cut it anymore. You need to go beyond blog. What experience are you creating within that environment that's going to keep people there? So experiential is purely digital right now, as we know. And sometimes that's developing an app that is not just about the brand, but is useful in some way personally. It's about creating an experience on a website where there's not just knowledge feeds, but there's something you can listen to, there's something you can watch, maybe there's like members areas and resources. And this is what we do. We build these digital experiences now that are bespoke to that particular user. And I think it's kind of how it has to be until possibly June, July. Different, obviously, in other countries that have fared a bit better.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to things getting back to normal?
Yes. I think one of the things I miss the most is being in our offices here and our offices in Japan and actually just being with our staff, everyone being together, bouncing that creativity and meeting the new staff as well in person. Difficult at the moment because we're a very close business. Our culture is very different. You know, we do things that you've probably read about. I still believe we are the only marketing firm in the UK that has full-time psychological support for all members of the staff 24/7. And we've done that for 5 years, over 5 years now. So if any of the staff need psychological support in or outside the business for anything, they've got it. It's all paid for. It's all done. And I've always had that philosophy because I think that, and this comes from my experience in Japan, there's a reciprocal relationship between the company and between the employee, which is the employee is incredibly devoted to the companies because it's the company's job to look after them. You devote so much time to your work. Why wouldn't the company want to look after that employee properly and give them support and opportunities and growth and learning and da da da? Why would you not? So for me, it just makes common sense. You know, mental health is a challenge. We should be supporting everybody. You know. And the funny thing is that you do the right thing for the right reasons, it's good. But not only is it good because it's the right thing to do, it also has positive effects. And this is why I am always surprised when large, you know, corporate entities in the UK, unfortunately, just ignore all the science, they ignore all the evidence, all the research, everything that shows that positivity and positive psychology actually produces productivity and greater profitability.
Okay, so I'm going to go on a bit of a tangent now, if that's okay. Given that the internet seems to be constantly breaking down barriers to entry, has your firm found that more and more business people are interested in jumping into these new markets?
I think technology-first firms, yes, definitely. Firms that already have a digital perspective, whether they have developed a new type of system that can solve problems or they're already thinking about international shipping, yes. So we do a lot in North America at the moment. We're currently breaking down some barriers in Canada. I've just been given the title of a marketing mentor for Collective Brains in Seattle. So we're doing a lot more over there now. I find that Australia has been an open door from day one. Japan, obviously, Most companies fail in Japan. We didn't, because we had a very different approach, which meant we were successful very quickly. I do feel that internationally, our clients in Australia are eager to work with companies in China and Japan and South Africa, etc. Companies that we work with in North America, again, global mindset, particularly on the West Coast. Even our clients in Texas, actually, particularly Houston, interested in doing stuff around the world. The UK is a little bit different. The UK market, we may feel that we're quite open, but we're really not. We're very closed community-wise. There's not really as much collectivism in the UK as you find in other cultures. I think it's because of that drive towards individualism and consumerism that's kind of driven our culture for possibly far too long. It's a different mindset here. We find that in other countries, more companies are open to being globally active. The UK is starting to wake up. It's harder to get the smaller businesses to engage with that. The bigger businesses are starting to really engage with it. And we have a number of clients in London that are now working with us on collaborative initiatives with other countries to talk about this opening of barriers. So I've got a series of talks coming up on China and the market access in China and things like that. I do think that the UK is starting to wake up. But again, from a marketing perspective, from a technology perspective, from a communications perspective, the UK is very, very slow at adapting, very, very slow at modernizing and taking up new technologies. I recently gave an interview on voice marketing, and I was talking to entrepreneurs in North America who are developing incredible technologies to engage with search and audio search. And it's so different. We, again, the UK seems to be, I think we're going to be waiting another 5 to 10 years before we're going to catch up like we did with social media. So it's a challenge here, I think.
Sounds it. Interesting chatting to you at the minute, because I'm getting flashbacks from my last conversation with Simon Glenn. And he's a tech entrepreneur who's thinking about breaking into the Japanese market.
Did Simon tell you about me then?
Oh, no, I didn't realise you were already friends.
So I'm helping Simon in the Japanese market.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, so I've just made a few introductions for Simon and Chris at Meow so that they can be with some influential people in Tokyo and open out there. So I've helped him start that journey.
Excellent. That's funny. I had no idea.
We are the go-to for Japan at the moment. That's kind of what we've become, I think, because we've been active in Japan for UK businesses for over half a decade now. And we've been overwhelmingly successful as well, not just in UK to Japan, but also Japan to the UK. So we've become a bit of a go-to. But now, because we do a lot of Southern Europe market entry into the UK as well. And I think brands are looking at new markets, which every brand needs to be looking at new markets right now, because it's the only way to get sustainability. And the UK, well, or the financial forecasts for the UK are not as sunny as we'd like over the next 2 years. But other markets around the world, it's very different. There's a lot of positivity. So you have to be agile. And I think that's one of the reasons that we've been particularly successful over the last 12 months is because people have been more open-minded, I think.
Okay. So what would you recommend, Johnny, that listeners do to avoid this bad branding trap?
The obvious steps that we take is start with your audience. Everyone always says this, but unfortunately, a lot of agencies and a lot of businesses don't. I always use the analogy of a purple frog on a unicycle for an accountancy firm. The MD's got an idea. It's a bit off the wall, but we think it'll work. Purple frog on a unicycle. And we have to honestly feed that back and say, sorry, chaps, but those markets aren't going to really engage with that concept. So I think it's about being sensible and being competent. We know that market entry into the marketing industry, the bar is very low. You can start a Facebook page and then go, I'm a marketing expert. Thankfully for our clients, I've got over 20 years of doing this. And in the business, we've got years and years of experience of different forms of marketing. And also, I was one of the first people to use MySpace to promote businesses back in the early 2000s. So I think experience is important. I think knowledge is important. I mean, our whole ethos is driven by ethics, guided by knowledge. And that means that we do things competently and we only work with companies that meet our values. So I think anybody who's looking to brand a business, whether it's domestic or abroad, they need to get very serious about research and not being lazy when it comes to research. I mean, really speaking to people on the ground, understanding the nuances in the linguistic competency as well. So you don't make any of the previous examples, any challenges that I illustrated. There's a cultural aspect that they need to research that includes co-creation. So when we create brands, we work with a lot of children's charities. And when we do that, we don't dictate what is going to appeal to certain children from certain communities to get them to engage with education and things like that. We go to those communities and we pay those children to actually tell us their opinions. You know, tell us what you think this brand means to you. Tell us what you think this engagement piece means to you. And that's what we should be doing. Again, it seems so obvious to me. Obviously, there's the competitive research. There's understanding the top level strategy. What are other brands doing to reach people? What infrastructure do they have in those markets as well? What's your competition strategy? Where can we fill gaps that are missing as well? There's lots of things but people, I think, particularly in our sector, rely on very meaningless tropes. You know, a lot of people say, it's all about brand. Okay, right. I know what those words mean. Now say something. There's a lot of people who there's form over substance in our industry at the moment. There's lots of these gurus, the self-proclaimed gurus who talk about marketing and they say noise, more content. And you go, okay, and then what? What kind of content? How should we create? Like, no, create more content. But why? But who to? How's the tone of voice work? Do we need to understand the visuals? How does this look to our consumers? And some people just come out with this innate crap, basically. And again, and because they sound excitable and because they have so much conviction, it's all psychology, it's manipulation, similar to what Donald Trump did. It was that manipulative psychology to get people engaged with an idea, even though there's no idea beneath the surface. It's just words. And I think we're starting to move away from that. I really do hope so, that people are starting, particularly in our industry, to start to see the wood from the trees and understand that actually there has to be depth when you consider a brand. There has to be depth when you consider messaging. But we're fighting. I think the sensible people in our industry who are competent at what they do are at the moment fighting a bit of a battle with the perhaps younger marketeers who believe it's all about noise without substance. And that's where they really fail when it comes to international markets. Because not all noise is good noise, regardless of what people may believe. And we know that, because if all noise was good noise, then finger licking good, eat their fingers off, which got a lot of noise, wouldn't have cost KFC so many millions of pounds. The same with Vicks and the same with Pepsi, that for some reason want to bring our ancestors back from the grave. We have to be competent. We have to understand that connection has to be purposeful. It can't just be noise. And I think if I was going to give anybody advice in process, it's to actually step out of it first and consider what you're doing and why you're doing it.
I feel like you're debunking an old phrase. I think it's all publicity is good publicity. And you're making a clear case that it's not, which makes a lot of sense given the difference in money gained versus money lost there. As for the branding professionals or youngsters in the industry, my take on it is that I think there's a lot of young guns that are not only young guns but old ones just talking about things they read about, and that's all good and fine. But branding is quite a new, fresh thing still, isn't it? It's quite a young profession, and I wonder if a lot of it's down to teething problems.
That's a really good statement. I think as a concept, branding is ancient. If you think of philosophy, you know, types of philosophy of brands. If you think of foods, if you think of the first, when did advertising start? You could say it started in Roman times when they used to put the adverts on the front of the village walls for where you would get certain products and services. You could say that contemporary marketing started with Edward Bernays in New York, you know, the nephew of Sigmund Freud, when he decided to use his uncle's ideas to manipulate people to, at the time, consume products that we would know would later cause lots of illness. I think branding has been around forever. I think now we are more sensitive to the nuance because it's noisier. I think the internet is an incredible tool when used in the right way. It's democratized information. When I was a kid, that was the thing I was most excited about from my upbringing, is I could actually access information now. And then it became the democratization of voice with platforms that did very well in the early days like MySpace. And then it started to change a little bit. MySpace kind of died when it was bought out by a record label, and they tried to only promote certain things, and they killed a lot of the independent musicians' reach. Facebook monetized and monetized and monetized to the point of you need to spend some serious money to make Facebook work for you now. And they've done that very quickly. 2015, you could still do an incredible amount with Facebook. Now it's been monetized to the point of, well, it's become something different. And I think sometimes the noisiest people and the most visible people doesn't mean they're the right people to listen to. And we know that a lot from what's happened recently in America. There's lots of noisy people that are saying lots of unusual things. And unfortunately, because of the way that they're being said and the way that media is used, people are listening to that. And I think within our sector, there are some very noisy people who don't say very much, but are really good at the way they say it. And they do leverage very subtle psychological techniques and how they use syntax and the lexicon. And unfortunately, that's influencing a lot of young marketeers to lose nuance and lose that intelligent articulation of what branding and what marketing can be. I think as the world starts to consider its ethics more, and we look at things like the climate crisis and the challenges that we're currently, that are affecting all of us, I believe that people are starting to now think more competently and conscientiously about how they engage with the world. And I'm hoping that's enabling people to start to think about their own values and their ethics. That should hopefully start to flush out some of those noisy people that don't say very much, but are very noisy. And people who are more intelligently articulate in trying to do something with purpose and meaning and contribution will be the voices that actually start to become appreciated. That's my hope. And I think if we get that in the branding and marketing industry, then we may be able to build a better world.
Hopefully. Very well said. Okay, so I'm aware we're really short on time, but I want to ask you one quick question before we go. And it's slightly off topic, so I hope you don't mind. I noticed from your bio, which others, by the way, can find in the show notes, that you've appeared on some very well-known shows like Good Morning Britain, the BBC Political Debates, BBC Radio, and loads more. I'm wondering, do you have any advice or suggestions for the experts out there that would love to do the same, but aren't sure where to start?
So there's two ways. I mean, obviously you can engage with a PR firm. All my media has never been through PR firm, by the way. Sometimes I think it's a little bit of, what can I do? What's the shortest journey? Now, I could do lots of research, hire a PR firm, ask them to meet with certain contacts, da, 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 da. Or I could go to an event. I mean, I went to the Women in Journalism Awards a few years ago and I met lots of journalists. And I was working with a brand that sponsored the event and met various people from News UK, et cetera. Most recently, I've got quite a bit of PR based on the ethics and the values of how we operate, which, again, is quite unusual in our industry. Most of that is me just reaching out. So understanding who those journalists are. So who is the business editor of this newspaper or that magazine? Just sending them a message on LinkedIn and just saying, hey, this is a story. Might be useful to your listeners. What do you think? Or your readers or the people who watch. And that's generally how it's happened. More than anything else is just, I think people get hung up on titles too much because that creates particularly in our society, when we have the, because we have a class system that's still very rigid, people think of superior and inferior, don't they, in titles. And I think realizing, you know, everybody, everyone goes to bed at night, everyone wakes up in pretty much the same way, you know, everyone puts your shoes and socks on the same way. You're all just human beings. And once you start to see people are actually just another human being that's scrambling the way through life, trying to enjoy the process of being alive, it breaks down barriers. And then you can actually just have more authentic conversations with those people and just say, and some people do, some people are personally hung up on needing to be superior to others. And those people, you just have to take them with a pinch of salt and give them a bit of love because they obviously need it. So for me, it's just reach out. All the, you know, most of the media I've got, even the media in Japan, just have authentic conversations with people. If you've got a story, tell them you've got a story. Not everybody will reply, but just don't take it personally because everyone's busy. And if somebody doesn't know you, they don't know you, don't take it personally.
Brilliant. Thank you for the answer. Really good. So do you think there's anything I should have asked today that I haven't asked, Johnny?
That's a really unique question.
I know it's a difficult one to answer.
Wow, you've really activated my brain there. Thanks. I think I can't think of anything in the moment. I'm sure you'll ask me if something comes up. It's a really good question, though. That's a really good question. I like that.
I can't take credit from it. I stole it from Christo, I think. But it is very good. Okay, well, let's leave it there then. It's a good time to call it a day. Okay, Johnny, this has been really great. I really enjoyed this one. Thanks ever so much for your time. Where can the listeners find out more about you online?
So they can check me out on LinkedIn. That's Johnny Pavlik, JOHMMYPAWLIK. So connect with me on LinkedIn. Or go to our website, www.mantrahq.com, and they can find us on all social and everywhere else. But they're probably the main places. Until we can do events again. And then they can come to Ikigai House later this year, hopefully.
Wonderful. One day. Brilliant. Well, thanks for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
You're very welcome. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. And please join me again on Building Expert Brands. Ta-ra for now.